You woke up this morning and the floor held. I want to begin there because it is the least interesting sentence I could say to you, and that is precisely the reason. The floor held. The ceiling stayed where it was. Water came out of the tap at roughly the temperature you asked for, and it was safe to drink, which took somebody about a century to arrange. The lights came on. Your phone had charged overnight. The bread was not moldy. The car started, or the train came. Or the bus came, and the road was where the road was yesterday. Somewhere in a building you have never seen and could not find, a machine moved money out of your account to pay for something you agreed to pay for a year ago and have not thought about since. None of that reached you. Thousands of systems ran this morning on your behalf, and not one of them sent you a bill in the only currency you cannot replace. You did not notice the floor. You did not thank the water. You did not audit the payment. They did their work, and they did not ask you for anything. And then at some point, something did reach you. Maybe it was a notification. Maybe it was a number in an email that was not the number you were expecting. Maybe it was the particular quality of silence from somebody at the breakfast table. Whatever it was, it got in. It crossed the line that the floor and the water and the payment never crossed, and for a moment you were fully there, entirely present, spending the one thing you have that cannot be borrowed. I want to spend the next half hour on that line, because the line is moving. Machines are learning to stand on the far side of it, the quiet side, the side where the floor and the water live. And when a machine crosses over to that side, it stops being a product you use and becomes part of the world you stand on. That migration is the largest economic event of our lifetimes, and almost nobody is measuring it, because we are all still measuring what the machines can do. That's the wrong number. Let me tell you what the right one is. Every list of scarce things is wrong in the same way. You have seen the list. It opens the conference. It's on the slide. It's in the policy paper. It's in the investor letter. Capital, energy, compute, land, labor, data, chips, talent, trust. The order changes. The contents rarely do. Nothing on that list is wrong. Every one of those things is genuinely scarce, and people have gone to war over most of them. But the list has a property nobody says out loud. Every item on it is waiting. Money waits for somebody to attend to it before it becomes judgment. Data waits to become understanding. Compute waits to become a responsible decision. Land waits for somebody to decide what it is for. Talent waits to be recognized by a particular person on a particular afternoon. Trust waits to be extended, and it is extended by somebody who noticed something. None of it moves on its own. The dollar in the account is not doing anything. The model that ran overnight is not deciding anything. The report is not understood until somebody reads it, and reading, as we all know, is not the same as looking at the page. There is a resource underneath the list, and it has a different structure than everything above it. Money can be borrowed. If you do not have it now, you can have it now and pay for it later. Energy can be generated. Compute can be scaled, which is to say it is a purchasing decision and a supply chain. Land can be bought, and where it cannot be bought, it can sometimes be reclaimed from the sea. Human attention has none of these properties. You cannot borrow attention against next week. There is no lender. You cannot manufacture it by building a facility. You cannot import it from a country with a surplus. You can free some up, which is what this whole story is about. But freeing is not the same as making. And once a conscious moment has been spent, it cannot be reissued. There is no ledger entry that gives it back. We hide this from ourselves with a word, and the word is time. We say we are out of time when we mean we are out of attention. We say the meeting took an hour, as though the hour were the thing that got consumed. It was not. You can sit in a meeting for 60 minutes and give it almost nothing. You can hear one sentence and be changed by it for a decade. Time is the container. Attention is what happens inside the container, and the container was never the scarce part. Two people can be handed the same hour, and one of them will have spent something the other did not. So what is it, actually? Not poetically, not as a metaphor about spotlights. What is the thing that got spent when the number in the email caught you and did not get spent on the floor? Here is the smallest piece of mathematics I know that gives an honest answer, and I'm going to say it in words rather than symbols, because you are listening rather than reading. Reality is a quotient. Reality is what happened, divided by what you expected, not what happened. What happened, divided by what you were set up to receive. That division is running continuously underneath awareness, faster than you can follow, and the result of it is a number. When what happened matches what you expected, the quotient is one. When the world arrives thinner than the model that met it, the quotient falls below one, and that is the formal shape of disappointment, boredom, the flat afternoon. When the world overruns the model, the quotient rises above one, and that is the shape of shock, awe, and being blindsided in a parking lot. Surprise is what you get when you take the logarithm of that quotient, which is a technical way of saying something very simple. Surprise is the distance between what happened and what you were expecting. When the two are equal, the distance is zero. There is no surprise at all. And attention is what is left over after all of that surprise has been accumulated, weighted, compressed, and handed up to consciousness as one thing you can actually hold. Attention is the remainder. That is the whole model, and I want to sit on it for a second because it explains something people argue about constantly and never settle. Two people go to the same wedding, same room, same vows, same slightly dry chicken. One of them leaves saying it was the most moving evening of the year. The other leaves saying it was fine. The usual explanation is that they experience different events. That perception is subjective, that we each have our own truth, that reality is what you make it. It is a generous idea, and it is a modeling failure, because it explains a difference by inventing a second world, which is the most expensive explanation available, and the least informative one. The actual was one. The wedding happened once. What differed was the divisor. Same numerator, different denominator, different quotient. Same actual, different reality. That is not relativism. That is arithmetic. And it means that when two people cannot agree about what happened, they're usually not arguing about facts at all. They're arguing about divisors in the vocabulary of numerators, which is why those arguments never resolve and why both people leave convinced the other one is lying. Now here is the part that changes how you see the world. And it took me an embarrassingly long time to accept it. The reason the floor did not reach you this morning is not that the floor is unimportant. The floor is extremely important. If the floor fails, nothing else in your day matters. The floor did not reach you because the floor was predicted. What happened matched what you expected. The quotient sat at one, the surprise was zero, and nothing was handed up. I call this absorption, and it is the single most useful idea I have to offer you. Absorption is prediction success. A thing does not disappear from your awareness because it stopped mattering. It disappears because it became predictable enough to stop generating surprise. Your heartbeat. Your balance. The drive you have made 4,000 times. The colleague who has never once missed a deadline. The product line that just works. The marriage that is fine. Less interesting does not mean less important. Say that one twice. Less interesting does not mean less important. And notice what this implies about your own mind. You are not receiving the world. You are receiving the exceptions. Everything that worked was filtered out before it reached you. So what arrives in consciousness is the small, strange residue that the prediction machine could not dissolve. And because that residue is all you get, it feels like the whole system. It's not the whole system. It is the exception cue. Your sense of what is going on in your life, in your company, in your country, is assembled almost entirely from the things that went wrong or went strangely, which is why the world feels more broken than it is, and why the parts of it that are actually holding you up are invisible to you by design. There is a business version of this, and once you see it, you will see it everywhere. Attention behaves like an auction. Something is always winning. And the winner does not usually change because a new bidder got louder. The winner changes because the old bidder got quieter. A company starts, and the customer is a total mystery. Every conversation with a customer is full of surprise, which means the customer bids enormously for the founder's attention. The founder thinks about nothing else. Then the company learns, it gets good, the customer becomes predictable, the customer is still important, the customer is more important than ever. but the customer stopped being surprising, and the bid fell. And into that gap comes finance, or the board, or a metric that is moving strangely, or a competitor doing something odd. None of them got louder. The customer got quieter. And everybody stands around afterward asking how the company lost its way, as though somebody made a decision. Nobody made a decision. An auction cleared. Quiet value is dangerous. The reliable person gets taken for granted. The mature product gets underloved. The stable relationship gets ignored, and the working system disappears from attention right up until the day it returns as a problem. Which brings me to the machines. We have a bad analogy for artificial intelligence and a worse one waiting behind it. The bad analogy is the tool. The worse one is the colleague. The right analogy is the subconscious. Think about what your biological subconscious actually does. It does not do your thinking. It does something more radical than that. It maintains the enormous predictable substrate of your life so completely that you never have to think about it. It absorbs. It runs your breathing, your balance, the recognition of faces, the grammar of your native language, the route to the office, and it hands you nothing, because handing you something would be a failure. What we are building is a second one, a synthetic subconscious, a layer of machinery that maintains the ordinary world beneath deliberate awareness. And once you see it that way, the standard question about AI becomes obviously the wrong question. The standard question is, what can it do? How capable is it? What is the benchmark? That question will keep being asked, and it will keep being less relevant than it sounds, because capability was never the threshold. The threshold is silence. Artificial intelligence becomes genuinely valuable at the moment it stops asking to be noticed, not when it can do the work. When it can do the work and not tell you about it. When it can absorb a category of surprise so completely that the category leaves your life the way the floor left your life. This is why so much automation feels like a second job. The labor disappeared and the interruption remained. The system does the task and then reports on the task and asks you to check it and sends you a summary and puts a badge on an icon, and now you are supervising something instead of doing it, which is often worse. The work got easier. The day did not. An agent that needs constant admiration is not an agent. It is an extremely articulate appliance. So here is the test, and I think it is the only one that survives every technology you apply it to. Bad systems capture attention. Good systems return it. Not, does it save time? Time is the container. Ask instead, after this thing touches a person, how much of that person is left over? How much unresolved surprise is still sitting in their head that they did not need to be carrying? If the answer is more than they needed, the system took something, whatever it says on the invoice. Now, if a machine can earn the right to be ignored, you should want to know what that right costs, because it is not free, and the bill arrives in three separate envelopes. The first envelope is trust, and trust is slower than anybody wants it to be. Nobody decides to trust an elevator. There is no moment. You get in, and it works, and it works, and it works, and one day you realize you have not thought about the cable in 15 years. Trust is permission to stop paying attention, and it is purchased with attention already paid. Every new system arrives carrying a debt, and vigilance is the principle. The currency you pay that debt in is uneventfulness. Nothing happened. Nothing happened again. Nothing happened for the 11th week running. Which is a strange kind of payment, because it leaves no trace anywhere. Nobody writes a report about the Tuesday when the system was fine, and this sets a speed limit that no amount of money or compute can raise. There are 52 Tuesdays in a year. Capability compounds at the speed of training runs. Trust compounds at the speed of Tuesdays, and nobody has ever bought a 53rd. A demonstration is not a payment against that debt. A demonstration is an application for the loan. The second envelope is the dividend, and it is the one that gets stolen most often. When a system finally earns silence, the attention it used to consume does not evaporate. It comes back. Every absorbed process is a small annuity that pays out every week for as long as it keeps working. That returned attention is the actual product, not the output. The output was never the point. The dividend is the point, and it disappears almost immediately because a freed hour is the easiest territory on earth to seize. Coordination overhead takes it. New meetings take it. The tool that replaced the work sends its own notifications and takes it back. And the cruelest version is what I would call attention theater, which is people watching systems that no longer need watching, staring at a dashboard that has been green for 2 years, because it feels responsible. That is not vigilance. That is spending the dividend on the thing that paid it. A freed hour has exactly three fates. It gets recolonized and the yield is zero. It gets consumed, which is legitimate. People are allowed to rest, but it does not compound. Or it gets reinvested somewhere the world is still surprising, and that is the only version that compounds. So decide in advance where it goes. An unallocated hour is a colonized hour. The third envelope is the one nobody opens until it is too late. Absorption does not destroy surprise, it defers it. A system that absorbs a domain converts a steady drizzle of small daily surprises into a reservoir of large, infrequent ones. And that drizzle was doing something. That drizzle was keeping somebody in practice. The reservoir is completely silent, right up until the dam gives. There's an old observation from the study of automation made in 1983 by an engineer named Lassan Bainbridge, and it has aged terrifyingly well. The better the automation, she noticed, the fewer opportunities the human operator has to practice the skills they will need on the day the automation fails. The system earns the right to be ignored on exactly the same schedule that the person loses the ability to watch it. So whatever you absorb has to be matched by something, not by staring. Staring is not a reserve, it is a performance of one, and it costs you the dividend you just earned. What you need is rehearsal. Scheduled, deliberate, small. Do it manually once a quarter. Break it on purpose in a controlled way. Write down in advance where the system's predictions stop being good. Keep the memory of the last failure somewhere a new person can read it. Zero attention in operation, funded by scheduled attention in rehearsal. Both halves are load-bearing. And inside that third envelope is a second bill, which I find the most uncomfortable idea in all of this. Every profession has always run two operations at the same time. One produced the work, the other produced the people. And nobody ever budgeted for the second one because it was free. A radiologist who has read 10,000 unremarkable films is not 10,000 films bored. She is 10,000 films calibrated. And the thing that makes her stop on film 10,001, the snag, the sense that something is off before she can say why, is the entire product of the 10,000 that came before it. Here is the collision. The work with the lowest surprise density was the work with the highest teaching density. The boring cases were the curriculum. So absorption and apprenticeship have been competing for exactly the same raw material this whole time, and absorption pays better and faster and in cash. Take away the routine and you have not removed drudgery. You have removed the bottom of the ramp and left a cliff. And you will not notice for 20 years because the seniors you have right now were trained under the old system. The bill arrives at their retirement. Judgment is compressed surprise. Information you can transfer. Judgment has to be grown. You cannot download a riverbed. There is one more machine in this story, and it is not the one absorbing your life. It is the one manufacturing your attention. Because if attention is captured by surprise, then anything that can produce surprise on demand can take you whenever it likes. And a feed does not need a theory of your soul to do that. It does not need to understand you. It only needs to place high surprise objects in front of a creature governed by divergence, and the mechanism does the rest. This is why willpower is such a weak instrument here. Attention is stolen, not given, and I do not mean that as a metaphor. I mean it mechanically. The capture happens before the interpretation. By the time you have an opinion about whether that thing deserved you, it already had you. So the exhortation fails. Pay attention to better things is advice that assumes a sovereignty the machinery does not grant. But there is something you can do, and it is stronger, and it is this. Stop trying to become unstealable. Go stand somewhere. Better things can steal you. Because here is the part I did not expect when I started working on this. Surprise, once attended, gets metabolized and kept. Memory holds, overwhelmingly, what attention touched, and attention touched what surprised you. Which makes identity something close to a ledger of the surprises you metabolized. You are the error terms. You are the moments your model broke and had to be rebuilt slightly larger. And that means prediction is personality's off switch. The 1,000th drive to the office adds nothing to who you are. Whatever you have completely predicted, you have finished becoming. The only place a self can still grow is territory that has not been absorbed yet, which puts a very sharp point on the feed. Engineered surprise is optimized for capture, not for growth. It is surprise the way candy is food. Real sugar, no soil. It fills the ledger with entries that deposit nothing. And you can spend a decade that way and arrive at the end of it having been astonished 10,000 times and changed by none of it. Earned surprise is different, and the difference is simple enough to use tomorrow. Earned surprise costs you a prediction first. You committed to an expectation, you put it out where the world could break it, and the world broke it. That is the only kind that rebuilds the model. There are two ways to lose here, and both of them are quiet. One is starvation, where the days are pleasant and nothing unpredicted ever lands, and the years turn out to be empty. The other is junk, where the ledger is full and every entry was written by somebody optimizing for something that was not you. If attention is the ledger of surprise, then whoever schedules your surprise is writing your ledger. So let me tell you why I think attention is actually valuable, because it is not the reason the advertising industry thinks. Attention is not valuable because it can be sold. It is valuable because it is the price consciousness pays to update. Reality arrives singular. One thing happened. Your model of the world is complicated, and it is wrong in 1,000 small ways, and every time the singular thing collides with the complicated model, something has to be paid for the model to change. What gets paid is attention. That is the cost of calibration. And it is the only mechanism you have for staying in contact with what is actually true. Which is why the two machines matter so much and matter so differently. One of them absorbs the predictable so that your calibration budget goes toward things that actually require it. The other manufactures calibration costs on purpose in order to bill you for them. That, in the end, is the standard this period will be judged by, not how capable the machines got. Whether they multiplied the cost of calibration for capture or returned it to the people who have to meet reality. I called this the zero attention economy, and I want to take the title back before I let you go. Zero was always a direction, and it was never a destination. It is what a well-designed system should be driving toward for its own operation. Zero claims on you for the part of the world it was given to maintain. It is emphatically not a target for a person. A life with nothing left to attend to is not a liberated life. It is an empty one. If the goal were simply less surprise, then the ideal existence would be one in which every quotient had resolved to one. Nothing unexpected, nothing unresolved, nothing left to pay for, and that life would be poor, not tranquil, poor. Someone to whom nothing is ever surprising has not achieved serenity. They have run out of the only material a self is built from. They know their work completely, which means they have stopped getting better at it. They know their spouse completely, which means they have stopped meeting them. So machines approach zero so that people can approach something else, and the something else is not the absence of attention. It is the availability of it. Nearly all of you, available for the parts of the world that actually require a human being. Judgment, repair, care, creation. The people your predictions never finish. That is the trade. That is the entire trade. Everything that gets absorbed should be buying that. And if it is not buying that, then somebody is taking the dividend and you are not the somebody. Let me leave you where I started. Tomorrow morning the floor will hold and you will not notice, and that is correct. Somebody paid for that silence a long time ago and you are living on the interest. Most of the good in the world looks exactly like that. Quiet, uneventful, and invisible, precisely because it is working. But somewhere in the day, something will get through. Something will arrive differently than you expected it to. And for a moment, the whole apparatus will point at it, and you will be entirely present, spending the one thing that cannot be reissued. That moment is where the world settles up with you. Every claim it has on you comes due there. Everything you will ever decide, everything you will ever repair, everyone you will ever actually see, has to pass through that narrow, expensive, unrepeatable place. It is worth being careful about what you let stand there. Machines are coming to take a great deal off your hands, and most of it should go. And the going of it is one of the better things happening in the world right now. But nobody is going to protect the remainder for you. Nobody is going to send you a statement showing what was returned and where it went. So watch what earned its silence. Watch what is still asking for your attention after it stopped deserving it. And decide in advance and on purpose what gets to surprise you, because you are going to become whatever does.